My guests for the second segment of today's show are Mary Martin, the Executive Director of the Santa Fe Animal Shelter, and Hannah Padilla, Director of Behavior and Training at the shelter. I think that means Director of Behavior and Training for the Animals.
Yes, that's correct.
Is it Hannah or Hannah?
Hannah.
Hannah, great. Thank you. Welcome to both of you.
Good morning. Welcome.
Thanks.
Good morning.
I'm so excited to have you on because for a lot of reasons. I mean, I've adopted my animals from the shelter. I have warm, fuzzy feelings for the shelter, but also the Santa Fe Animal Shelter, in my estimation, is probably the most successful nonprofit in Santa Fe. If not, you know, it's way up there at the top, if not the most successful. Last year, you had your 75th anniversary. This year, you're going to have your 10th anniversary at the Caja del Rio location.
That's right.
And those of you out there who have never visited the Santa Fe Animal Shelter, this is not a pound, as we used to call them. I well remember the old shelter on Cerritos Road so many years ago, which was a pound, so to speak. Anyway, Mary, thank you very much for being here, you guys. You guys do so much. You do so much more than take in lost and abandoned dogs and adopt them out. Will you kind of briefly outline all the different things you do now?
Well, I think the shelter has become a place that's really a safe haven for the animals that have lost their homes in Santa Fe and in the surrounding areas. We provide basic care, but also rehabilitation medically, rehabilitation behaviorally, and basically what we say now is we try to provide anything that they need to be able to be made ready to find a proper home.
Yeah, so you do veterinary service?
Absolutely. And everything you can think of, we repair animals that have been hit by car so that they've had fractures. And so pretty much you name it, we are able to manage it. If there's a veterinary solution to a problem, we are able to address it.
And you guys have pretty amazing vets out there.
We have incredible vets. I feel so fortunate to work with these people. They're amazing.
And you do spay and neuter clinics.
We do spay and neuter clinics. We have an incredible donor this year who has provided free service so that anyone in Santa Fe County can have their animals spayed for free. I know, it's amazing. It's
wow.
Amazing.
You don't have to submit income or
nope.
Anything like that? Wow.
Nope. She just wants to make sure that it's available to everyone that could possibly need it, period.
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
And you know, before we go any further, I should say, Santa Fe, your website is?
SFHumaneSociety.org.
SFHumaneSociety.org.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, and you can go there for a whole menu of things and find out how to contact and look into those possibilities.
Everything is there. Mm-hmm. Ben Swan has done an amazing job of making sure that all the information anyone could need is there.
Uh-huh.
But also they can message us on Facebook. Many, many people are using social media these days, and we respond within minutes of any request or message that we get on Facebook. So tell everyone, just find a way to get to us. We'll help you if we can.
Yeah, and you guys have amazing feeds on Facebook, because all you got to do is friend the Santa Fe Animal Shelter on Facebook, and you get these adorable pictures.
Doesn't Ben do an amazing job? It's so great.
Of animals that are ready for adoption or animals that have come in hurt and are being cared for. And it's sort of like this, almost every day is like this, oh, sort of experience.
It is. It is for all of us.
Yeah, and it's actually more meaningful, I think, because this is our community shelter. And I think we all have this sense of ownership in it, you know, in that way.
Yeah.
Hannah, tell us about the behavioral work that you do.
Right now, we are trying to raise the bar in terms of working with animals that absolutely have normal behavioral issues. It's just sometimes it doesn't fit with that one person or in that one home. We also are running into and seeing animals that come in that maybe have been in a backyard for years, no exposure to people or other animals, and they actually need a lot of work, time, going slow and at their own pace, and helping them gain the confidence to be a confident animal.
So I imagine that once upon a time, probably long before you guys were ever involved in this work, that an animal shelter, I'm not saying Santa Fe one particularly, but when dogs came in, especially dogs, came in with particular behavioral problems. They had bitten someone, or they had, you know, were barkers, and someone just comes and abandons them because they can't deal with it. Probably a lot of those dogs were euthanized.
No question.
Yeah.
No
and so today, like, give me some more examples. You mentioned the dog that was perhaps tied up outside all the time, but give me some examples of the types of behaviors that they exhibit that are problematic.
We do play groups out at our shelter, and one of the things we've been seeing a lot with our dogs is they actually haven't been able to build those skills, social skills, with other dogs. So it's been incredible to let them be a dog, put them around other dogs, and let them teach them how to wag their tail, play bow, and run around and play. And it's been great because it's something we can't teach. You know, we can't teach them how to be a dog around another dog, but uh-huh. it's fabulous to watch and learn from them.
If I could just jump in for a second,
mm-hmm.
Why that's a problem is that most people, when they adopt a dog, they want to have that dog be part of their social life. So they want to go to the dog park or take their dog on hikes. And if the dog cannot socialize with other dogs, it becomes a problem. And that's why those dogs end up back in the shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And Hannah's team works to overcome those challenges that those dogs have because they haven't developed the social skills. And it's amazing to watch the light go on and say, oh, I get the signal. I know what this means. I always wondered whether you could teach a dog those kinds of things, but we're watching it every day, that they can overcome the lack of having those skills or being terribly shy. We see a tremendous number of animals that come into the shelter who are just what we call shut down, but really you would recognize it as just being terribly shy. Everything is overwhelming to them. And very slowly, Hannah and her team work with those dogs to give them the confidence they need to manage being in a shelter environment, but also being able to transition from that shelter environment into a home.
Mm-hmm. So, say you were dealing with this dog that had been, you know, tied up outside. That's our example of the day, right?
Okay.
What would you do with it exactly?
Well, when they first come into the shelter, we assess them. So we, behaviorally assess how they are around food, new people, new situations. One of the big things we're running into with these shutdown dogs is just simple touch from a human.
Yes.
What does that mean? Is that scary? Does it mean something bad? We just try and get a baseline from them first. And then moving forward, we want to expose them and grow their skill every day. Even if it's one day you're not walking on a leash, you're just in your kennel and we're putting the leash on and we're exposing you to the leash and the pressure of that leash, and then the next day you're out for a walk. The next day a new person is walking you. So we're slowly, every day, we try to increase their skill, and we try to go at that dog's level because, again, with these shutdown dogs or maybe a dog that has had a really bad experience, we don't want to push them too fast so that they take three steps back. We want them to gain that confidence and learn, I like walking on a leash, and I like somebody that's new to put the leash on me and to go for a walk because it means something good.
Mm-hmm. And so how long might you work with a dog like that?
Sometimes, again, it all depends on the dog.
Sure, uh-huh.
But sometimes it could happen in minutes, days, weeks, months. And we're really fortunate right now that we're going to be having our new behavior center opening soon, and that's going to help us allow those dogs that need the weeks and the months of time to get through things, to be able to have that time.
So tell us about the new center. When is the opening and what is it?
the groundbreaking, hopefully, is January 31st, but we'll cross our fingers. but it's a new building out at our shelter where we have very differently designed kennels and space for our animal to work with our animals. So we're going to hopefully be able to do adoptions up there, special adoptions. You know, these dogs that will need more time or have specific behavioral issues that are workable, but need somebody that's very savvy and open up and really game for that, you know, who's up for that challenge to take them in their home and work with these issues.
sometimes Hollis, these dogs are, there's nothing really wrong with them. They just don't show well in the adoption center, and they need a different environment. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what this building will provide. But it will also, as Hannah said, will provide a comfortable space for to address all the different problems that we see. So there's smaller spaces, larger spaces, places where dogs have a lot of choice, because we find that a traditional adoption center doesn't allow many dogs, and but most dogs, the kind of choice they need. So if they're timid, they can go find a place to retreat to, that kind of thing.
Right. Yeah, I'm thinking so often, and many of these dogs have probably been abused, and they're the kind of dog that you can almost always see that. You reach out your hand, and if you reach over the head, the dog cowers because they've been hit. Mm-hmm. And so I can imagine that the noise and the cacophony alone of the ordinary shelter quarters would be too much for a dog like that.
Absolutely.
Now, how do you train? Well, back up a little bit. Was there one particular donor that has made this possible, this center?
It's actually three.
Oh.
Three different people involved in this facility, and we're so grateful to them for having had the vision, been able to actually embrace our vision for these animals. It's fascinating in Santa Fe because we've done spay-neuter for so many years now, high volume, high quality, that overpopulation isn't the problem that it once was. But the animals who are really mostly in danger in Santa Fe are animals with significant behavior challenges. Mm-hmm. And these donors recognize that and recognize that in Santa Fe people actually want us to spend the time and the resources on trying to make these animals more comfortable and more ready to be able to live in a normal home.
Since you didn't name those three donors, I'm imagining they're remaining anonymous?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Well, whoever you are out there, thank you very much.
Yes.
For that. Now, what about people training? Sometimes people complain. You go to adopt a dog or a cat or something, and you think you ought to be able to walk in and sign your name and take them out. And that's not quite how it works, is it, Mary?
Well, we try to make it as easy as possible because we don't want to be the place that judges people and all those kinds of things. What we try to do instead of making it harder is provide support. But I have to say, all of us, including myself, have said, well, you know, I've had dogs my whole life, and you know, we know how to train a dog. And once people like Hannah have opened our eyes to what maybe we could do or should do, we kind of go, oi. I don't know how my dogs ever survived me, to be honest. And that's one of the most wonderful things that Hannah and the team do, is really help us without shame and recrimination, just to say, you might consider trying this instead of that. And using positive reinforcement to train dogs, we've really gone away from using aversives and jerking and all
right.
those kinds of things. And it's amazing. It's better living through treats, honestly. Better living through roast beef. I mean, it's amazing.
Now, I want to know about your cat training program.
We do. Actually, we have
you
two.
Don't.
We do. We have two cats right now that they... what I've found with the animals at the shelter is when you take that choice away, you put them on edge. They're trying to figure out, okay, what's the next step, and what do you mean, what do you want right now? And even with our cats, we have two cats right now that we're working with, just being able to pick up. They maybe, again, had a bad experience or have not been picked up a lot, but they're fine with you, you know, scritching on their head and you know, loving them. But the minute you have the agenda and you try to pick them up, they're not okay with that.
Fighting and scratching,
so,
yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so we're working on just, again, letting them have the choice. You can approach me. You can come up to me. Is this okay? Can I do this to you? And
uh-huh.
and always pairing that with something good. So,
yeah.
You're going to let me just rub on your belly. I'm not going to pick you up, but I'm going to rub on your belly, and here's a little piece of tuna.
Oh, I'd like to see you rub on my cat's belly. Not going to happen. No, I'm sure it would happen in time, but it hasn't happened for me yet. That would be a red letter day. So, Hannah, how did you come to be a behavior expert?
I actually went to school to work with marine mammals.
Uh-huh.
And when I went in Hawaii, I went to do an internship at a dolphin institute. I met a dog trainer there, and she said, well, why don't you work with dogs? And I thought, there could be something there. So I went to San Francisco. I got my bachelor of science in zoology, and I went to the dog training, San Francisco SFPCA Dog Training Academy out there with Gene Donaldson. And it was amazing. It was life-changing because, you know, prior to that, growing up in this day and age with training, you know, I was using prong collars and choke chains and, you know, pulling on the dog and trying to be dominant over the dog. And going to the academy really opened up my eyes and to show that they're animals and they have choice. And if you can communicate with them and, you know, ask them, this is what I want, what do you want, and have that relationship and kind of the ebb and flow of that, you can be very successful.
So, you know, I know that people out there are all wishing they could ask you questions. What are the, just tell me two or three things, simple training tips that you tell people who are adopting.
One of the biggest things that we see at the shelter is affiliation. We have dogs, again, either we don't know their background, and when a new person, you know, comes in and goes, oh, hey, I want to love on you and touch you and take you on a walk, we have a lot of those dogs that are reserved, and they go, wait a minute, what's going on? So we're trying to bridge that affiliation gap. And one of the things that I try to tell adopters is go slow. We usually have very high expectations. We get that dog, we want to take him home, we want to take him down to the plaza, show him off, give him a bath, take him to the dog park the next day, take him over to a friend's house. And that in a minute of hours is it's so
stressful.
Much.
Yeah.
So much. So I just try to tell people, go slow, let them have the choice, ask, you know, do you want to go outside? And I'll go outside with you, but we can take a few minutes to get you outside. It's not immediate. So go slow. And one of the other things that we really try to communicate to the adopters is they're animals. You know, dogs are animals. And we need to manage them and their animal instincts and what they're going to do in your home. You know, a lot of things like chewing, digging, potty training, those are all very easy things to solve simply with management. You know, I have two little kids at home, and it's just like having kids. You manage the kids. If you're going to turn your back and not watch them, somebody's going to get hurt. A Lego's going to get thrown too hard, or something's going to get shredded, or, you know, somebody's going to get hurt. So they're just like children. You want to watch them. You want to see what they're doing, what they're getting into. And maybe, you know, one of the things I gently try to tell, you know, clients is lower your expectations just a little bit. Let's just have a normal conversation that, you know, is this dog that's on the leash barking at your neighbor, is that a horrible behavior? No, they're guarding you.
They're
saying,
doggly.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
A dog. Exactly. Hey, who's that person? You know, thank you for alerting me that that's the person, you know, you're trying to alert me to. So I try to, normalize the expectations that we have for the animals and what those normal, you know, behaviors, they're okay.
Yeah.
They're workable.
Now, do you have other staff members in the behavior department, or are you mostly volunteer driven?
Both. We have 8 staff members right now.
Eight.
Yes. They are working out there. They're out there right now in the cold doing play groups, walking dogs. And we also have a great volunteer community that comes in, and we have a dog walking program and a cat socialization program. And they come in and they socialize with our animals. They brush our animals and play with them, and they walk them. They get them out 3 times a day and walk them. It's amazing. Our community and the support that they have for the animals is overwhelming.
But yeah, we are an animal crazy
yes.
community. I've never seen anything like it in any other
city. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, Hollis, aren't you a foster for us, or haven't you fostered in the past?
I've been a foster. Right now, the cat that I mentioned earlier is actually someone else's cat that I'm house sitting for and caring for while she's overseas.
Ah.
But yes, I didn't know about the foster program, and Savannah Sweat, the wonderful director of that program, came to my home, checked it out, made sure I was okay to be a foster. Mom gave me the training, and I was able to foster this darling little chihuahua that had a broken leg or hip that had come from LA and to here. And the vet was able to fix the leg, and Belle was her name, and I was able to keep her for a couple of weeks, I think.
That's
before.
Great.
Yeah, I brought her back. She healed very, very quickly. It was wonderful. I had her picture all over Facebook, you know.
I know that dog, and I'll tell you, it's wonderful that you did that. That relationship is so important because so many of these dogs would never have an opportunity.
Tell about how the foster program works, Mary.
Well, without that foster program, as I say, a lot of these animals wouldn't have the time they need. What the foster program does is give us time, because so many of these dogs that we take in that we now have the ability to fix, whether it's medically or behaviorally, we just don't have enough room. Mm-hmm. So foster parents give us those opportunities to get animals into a home environment where they can heal, whether it's mentally or physically. Mm-hmm. And we are so grateful to our foster families, because without them, none of this would really be possible. We just couldn't hold enough animals to make it possible.
And some of them are, I know sometimes they're puppies or whole litters of puppies. Mm-hmm. They may be hospice animals, that they're an animal that's so old and perhaps ill, they're not going to survive too long. But, you know, rather than euthanize them, they get to go live with a foster parent or family. Mm-hmm. Until their natural death, hopefully. And then these other ones, the medical ones, like little Belle that I had and cared for. It's a really amazing opportunity. And I think you guys have something like 58 or foster families out there.
Oh, I think at least. And I think every single employee is also
a foster.
Yes. I have a mom and pups at my home now. And so I think we all, it's an occupational hazard.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, and I, you know, for me, I was in a rental situation where I really couldn't have a permanent dog, and I knew I shouldn't make that commitment, but I wanted dog in my life again, other than my friends who think I'm crazy. I go over to their dogs and I fall all over them, right? And so having her was perfect. And then Savannah also told me that some people who live here part-time, perhaps only in the summer, are foster parents because they don't have dogs at home, perhaps, or can't bring them with them, and so they do the foster.
That's absolutely correct.
And kitties, too, of course. Lots of kitty cats and older cats that need fostering as well. I want to ask you about another program, the Gatos de Santa Fe. Tell us about that.
Well,
this is a new thing, right?
It's reasonably new, although I think we're in our third year. Yes, it's our third year. Gatos de Santa Fe is addressing the problem of feral cats in your community, or what we really try to refer to now as community cats. So cats that are non-affiliative, as Hannah would say, are not really interested in having a relationship with humans, but are living successfully in our community, right alongside us. And in the past, all over the country, these animals were considered a nuisance for a number of reasons and were captured usually and euthanized. And what we realized after 75 years of doing this is that we weren't reducing the number of feral cats. And so we're addressing it in a different way now through a program called TNR, or what we call Gatos de Santa Fe. TNR stands for Trap, Neuter, Return. So we trap these animals humanely, we neuter them, we vaccinate them, we actually mark them with what we call an ear tip, which is actually an amputation in the very tip of the ear, so they can be very easily recognized from a distance as an animal who's already been fixed and vaccinated, and so reasonably safe to have in the community. And by doing so, we have actually been able to reduce the number of animals that are coming into the shelter. Babies, we used to see thousands of babies coming in from feral cats, that the mothers would have these babies,
right,
and then something would panic them and they would abandon them. And so that number has really gone down. It's anecdotal information right now, but we're really looking at the data, because it appears that this is having a dramatic effect on the numbers of these litters in the community.
And then you return them to where they were picked up? Is
yes,
that
that's why it's not released. We're not just letting them go in the wild.
Right.
We're returning to where they were already living successfully.
So I have to tell you, it's kind of funny. A guy in my neighborhood once told me, well, you know, the animal shelter, they just get those cats and dump them out, because I saw him do it once.
Yeah, right. I know.
And I'm sure it was exactly this. It was a release of cats that had been spayed or neutered back into the community. But I think it's so brilliant. You know, you can't get rid of feral cats altogether.
Well, that's the point. And I know there are people who disagree with the program, but to me, there's only two choices. It's either cats breeding indiscriminately or cats that are spayed and neutered. There is no getting rid of
right.
That's not going to happen.
Right.
And because it's been tried and tried and tried. And so we feel like this is the most humane approach, and the approach that we're willing to be involved with. And as I say, so far, it's... Well, here's the most interesting thing, Hollis. When we started this program, we knew of two managed colonies in Santa Fe. when we
announce... What does that mean, managed colonies?
Somebody's feeding them.
Oh, yes. Uh-huh.
Taking care of them a little bit. And when we start telling... Stop euthanizing these cats and telling people, we want to help you. We will provide spay neuter for free for these cats. Mm-hmm. People came out of the woodwork. We now have 209 met colony managers. Yes. Yes, exactly.
209 identified people who are sort of taking care of a group of feral cats.
In 209 different spots.
Wow.
That's what I said. Exactly.
Wow, amazing.
So that means 209 colonies are now being addressed.
Yes.
So that through TNR, through trap, neuter, return. So we're very excited about that.
That's amazing, because it's a great example of dealing with reality in a humane way.
Absolutely.
You know, which is what we all, I think, want the animal shelter to do for us. As a community with a stake in it, and also as charitable human beings who love animals, you know, in both senses. We've got just a little bit of time left. What else is going on this year at the animal shelter?
Well, we're really looking forward, as Hannah said, to the opening of the rehabilitation center. It is it's a new concept for us, and we hope to be in it and moving by February 1. So that's going to be very exciting for us. And I think this year is going to be characterized very much by what we're doing behaviorally. But I don't want to forget about all the other programs that we participate in. And one of the ones we haven't discussed really is just our adoption program.
Right.
Because all this work that we do all has to culminate with somebody coming down to the shelter and giving those animals home. So we hope everybody will come down and take a tour of the shelter. As you said, it's not a pound. It's happy place.
Can you just call up, or do you just show up? Or?
Both. We want people to see what we're doing. So people can call up or show up. And one of us, any Ben or Hannah or I, and a lot of people will be happy to show off what the work that we're doing. It's been very exciting for us, and we hope that people will remember that we have a lot of wonderful pets for adoption, and that you could find almost anything. We have some coming from another shelter this week that include a snake and an iguana and a turtle. So it's not just about dogs and cats and hamsters and all sorts of things. So I hope people will come down and adopt.
And next time we'll talk more about that, your programs that of exchange with other shelters, where
Great.
You have too many big dogs and they have too many little dogs and that kind of stuff that goes on. Because I know that's, and other animals that are hurt, like little Belle, that's how she got here.
Yes.
I've been talking to Mary Martin, the executive director of the Santa Fe Animal Shelter, and Hannah Padilla, the director of the behavior and training program out there. It's been a pleasure to have you both here on the Radio Cafe. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Hollis. We've enjoyed it.